You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
When I first moved to New York City, it was 1994. I lived there as a child, but then I went away for school and then I came back. And I felt really lonely. In a city of 8 million people, sometimes you see all these people and you want to connect with them. And I just didn't know how. 7 years later, I went broke and I felt really lonely again because I was so ashamed of what had happened to me. And then I was getting a divorce. I felt really lonely again. And many times during my life, you feel this deep loneliness as if there is a storm and it just shipwrecks you somewhere and you're all by yourself. I brought on Rumi Turrentini, who's been on the podcast before. She wrote a book called Betraying the Nobel Prize, but now she has a course on loneliness. She has some really interesting insights. Sometimes even when you have friends, I'll go to a networking event and I just won't be able to talk to anybody. There's all types of loneliness, and she has some really good solutions and ways to deal with it. So there's a part one and then part two, but they're both downloaded today. I hope you enjoy. Today, Uni, we're talking about loneliness. You have written stuff, you've done videos, you have a course on loneliness. I have an outline of it. Why did you do a course on loneliness? Because it's such an important topic, and it's a really important topic for me. I'll describe it in a little bit, like maybe you could help me in the different types of loneliness I have felt even recently or in my life. But why did you make this course on loneliness?
You know, loneliness has been a big part of my life from I was a little girl, actually. My family moved around a lot in Norway when I was growing up. And so I always kind of felt out of place. We were different places because my dad's job. And then so I would be in a new school. I would speak the wrong dialect. I was kind of not like the others. So I felt like an outsider a lot of the time and had to sort of make a new foundation wherever we lived. And it was, you know, back in those days, people didn't move around so much like they do today, right? So, they had their family, they had their friends from, you know, generations in the same town. And so I was kind of the only one who didn't have that. So I felt a little bit sort of out of place and lacked belonging. I felt a bit rootless. And so loneliness was a big part of my life then. And then I also felt different.
So when you moved around from place to place, yeah, and you were trying to make friends, there was kind of the group that of kids that, I mean, people in Norway don't really move around so much, I imagine. I don't know if you were moving around Norway or the world, but little kids can be mean. And if they grow up together and there's a new person, and that person's the outsider, and hence the victim, the one they can pick on. Is that what you experienced a lot?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So that's, I experienced that. And then after, I kind of, when I was in my teens, you know, we kind of stabilized and we moved right outside of Oslo, the capital. And so we lived there and, you know, things stabilized and I changed my dialect, you know, again, and spoke like the other kids and tried to be like the other kids. But I still felt very much different from other people. And I think I was just trying to fit in, trying to be like other people growing up and being, you know, even as a young woman. And that really, and that is really, it's a kind of a different kind of loneliness when you kind of forget about yourself, you lose connection with yourself.
Yeah.
Trying to fit in and trying to be liked and trying to do all the right things that you think the other people are going to approve of. That has always sort of stayed with me. And then I moved abroad. First of all, I was in an exchange student in high school. Through this exchange program, they sent me to Kansas City, Kansas. So I spent a year there and that was really fun. And, but I was always, you know, always the sort of the outsider and the different one there too. And then I came back again. And I decided, you know, as soon as I can, I'm going to study abroad. So I started studying law in Norway. And then in the middle of my law studies, I moved to Paris and decided to learn French and study law there too. So that's what I did. And I kind of, after that...
Well, aren't you the overachiever?
Yeah, right, right. But that's another thing about my loneliness too, is that because I had this like emptiness inside of me, this hole that I was trying to fill. And I became this sort of overachiever, perfectionist, trying to prove my relevance or worth, you know?
Right. Like, I mean, I feel like I could sue people in every country now with you by my side. Like, everybody's going to want to be our friend if I'm just suing people in Paris and Oslo and...
Yeah. Maybe that's not a good strategy for making connection.
Probably not. Like, I think people try... But to be fair, people try that strategy. People try to get positions of power because then, you know, status gets you friends.
Yeah. Right? And that,
fear.
I really do think that is, you know, we try to prove our relevance and prove our worth by showing power, right? And even the same, it's a little bit the same with me too. I was trying to prove, you know, with all these, you know, degrees and then career and titles and even collecting people. I mean, you know, I was out networking and meeting people. So I have a good network, you know, pretty much all over the world because I lived in different places. But even that didn't fill up that emptiness that I had inside because I was so disconnected from myself. Mm. So I think that's an important aspect of the whole loneliness is that disconnection. And I think we see that in society a lot around us, right? How that disconnection manifests.
Right, because there's this other issue. First off, I like how you say there's multiple kinds of loneliness. I think people think loneliness is just when you're not around people mm-hmm. or you don't have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, so you're at home at night a lot and by yourself, and then you feel lonely. But it could mean a lot of different things. And like, for instance, in COVID, there was this particularly extreme kind of loneliness. Like, I wonder, what was it like for the people who just didn't really know people in their city and were living by themselves and they weren't dating anybody or maybe they didn't have family around and they were just locked in their apartment for a year from all the COVID lockdowns. Like, what happened to them?
I think it's been, I think we're, haven't even really seen the consequences of that, of the social isolation. Because it's really detrimental to our well-being, being lonely. It has consequences to our overall health, both physical and mental health. So, you know, we know that our immune system decreases. So we are more prone to get sick when we are lonely because we feel miserable. And this is research done, and someone who's done a lot of research on this is Vivek Murthy, Dr. Vivek Murthy, who is, I believe he is, again, the U.S. Surgeon General. He was under Obama, and now I think he is again under Biden. So He's done a lot of research on loneliness and connection. And he says that it's really detrimental. It's more dangerous to our physical health to be lonely than obesity and smoking.
Really?
Yeah, or smoking 15 cigarettes per day.
What? Why is that? I mean, I believe you when you say it, like it makes sense. But yeah. When you link it to something specific like obesity, which is always linked to so many major diseases, what does it cause? What diseases does it cause? Or I don't know how to ask.
Yeah, the way, you know, we human beings are, we're social beings, right? So we are hardwired to, in our brain, to be in a community, to live in a community. And we've kind of lost that sort of sense of tribe and community. And that started already in, you know, when we, in the Industrial Revolution, that's when we sort of lost that sense of, you know, people would move to places for work. And we lost, you know, we sort of were spread out, and we lost that sense of the importance of the community, which can also be, I have to say, detrimental as well when you are not considered valuable as an individual. That's something that we have a little bit here in Norway, at least when I was growing up, that it's you only matter as part of the tribe, as part of the group, as part of society. But as an individual, you're not valuable. Whereas I think today it has maybe gone overboard with the individualistic, you know, society, that it's all about like me, you know, see me, me, all, you know, and how we have undermined the importance of community, and that we don't know our neighbors. You know, we don't know the people who live around us in our near, you know, community. And so, so we see that in places where people actually have a strong sense of community, and these are called, and they have actually, there's certain places around the world called the Blue Zones. I don't know if you've heard of those, right?
I've had on Dan Buettner, who's the author of that.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, he's amazing. He's done some awesome
and research. Yeah, I'll describe real quickly for the listeners, even though I knew you were about to do it. I'm sorry for interrupting. But it's basically these like seven areas he identified around the world where people live with a high quality of life to over the age of 100. So there's a statistically high number of people living over the age of 100 compared with every other area in the world. So there's like seven of these blue zones. And one of them, and so he would identify, he would say like Okinawa in the, was a blue zone. And what's their diet? What do they do? What are their habits? And but all of the areas, everybody was kind of demographically the same, except for one area, which was Aventura, California. It was the only place in the United States.
Yeah.
And what linked, and he couldn't figure it out at first because they had different diets and they had different this. But what happened was, is that Aventura is kind of the home of the a religious sect called the Seventh-day Adventists. And every Saturday, they go hiking together. And that sense of community, he figured, plus the exercise, is what helped people avoid loneliness, and hence they lived longer.
Yeah, right? So we should all be in a sect.
Yeah. It's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
We know that being in a group makes people happy.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. It's really important to feel that you're part of a group. And I think that's what we've lost when you look at the polarization in our society. You know, that's because people don't feel part of the larger group, right? And that is a kind of loneliness. So Dr. Vivek Murthy says is that there are sort of three levels of loneliness. The first level is the intimate emotional level, which is, you know, having a spouse or a partner or like a best friend. And then you have the second level, which is the relational sort of level of connection, which we need to have a larger group of friends. And then the third level is the collective. And I think that's where we get the polarization, when we stop, you know, we don't maybe trust leadership. You know, we feel that leadership doesn't have, our government doesn't have our best interests at heart. You know, all these things, which I also touched upon in my book about the Nobel Peace Prize and why that, you know, why it is so important to have to trust in leadership. And we need all three.
Do you think we need all three? Like let's say you have a loving partner and you guys live out in the woods and you don't really hang out with friends and you don't really feel like you belong to any collective community. Will you start to feel lonely there or?
I think it depends on the person. I have actually experienced exactly what you're saying there because when I was living in Switzerland, my husband is Swiss, and we lived in Geneva. And then when our son was born, firstborn, we decided to move up to the Swiss mountains. So we moved up there. My husband
was
traveling a lot.
That's got to be super boring.
Exactly. And I stopped working. I was working in finance at the time, and I was used to traveling around and you know, taking groups of investors to see what we invested in, and to, you know, and traveling and being, you know, to Russia, to New York, and all these places. And then all of a sudden, at home with a newborn, in a place where I didn't really know any people, and there were a lot of cows, but you know, that was pretty much it. And my husband was away traveling for long periods at the time, and I felt miserable. And you know, I had everything that I wanted. I thought, you know, I had a good life. I had a husband, you know, who loved me, and a child that I loved more than anything. And yet, I was extremely lonely. So I think, at least for me, it wasn't enough to have just, you know, the loving husband and the child. I need to have people around me. Like, I need to have some sort of community.
Yeah. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I was just talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
I wanted to describe, because I feel like, so, and then we'll talk about solutions for loneliness, because this is such an important issue. Like you say, it's not just about being happy and avoiding depression and so on. It's actually about physical health. And like people literally have heart attacks when they're lonely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm thinking of like two different kinds of loneliness, but they represent some of the extremes you were talking about. Like, I remember when I, first time, I had made some money selling a business and then I went totally broke. I was living in the place I had always lived, like in New York City. I had many people who considered themselves my friends, my family lived all there, but I was incredibly lonely. And you describe this loneliness like I felt ashamed of what that I had lost all this money. So it was almost the loneliness was kind of triggered a little bit by this shame. And you say loneliness and shame go hand in hand. Loneliness can make you feel as if there's something wrong with you. I really felt there was something wrong with me. I lost everything. I was losing my home and I was depressed and I couldn't sleep. So I would literally walk all night because I just couldn't sleep and I had no motivation. People would call me, but I didn't want to talk to anybody because it was like a self-inflicted loneliness. Because of this shame and then shame at feeling lonely about it. And I didn't know who, I didn't have any ability to connect to anybody because I was so depressed and so on. Mm-hmm. And then there's another kind of loneliness I feel, which you also mention, which is I'm a very outgoing introvert. And I think people don't understand what introvert means. I think they think that introvert means, oh, you're shy and other people are really extroverted. They are you know, exuberant and great at a party and whatever. And I'm not shy at all. I could go up to anybody and talk to them. I have no fear doing public speaking. I perform comedy and in front of groups of people. And one-on-one, I feel I'm good with people. But if I'm like at a dinner party where there's like, let's say 10 people, or if I'm at a party at someone's house and again, about, let's say between 5 and 20 people, there'll come a point. So introversion, being an introvert means you lose energy with social interaction. And at some point you have to regenerate. And extrovert, from what I understand, you gain energy from social interaction. Again, you might be a shy extrovert and an outgoing introvert, but it's just how people gain energy and yep. recoup it. And so sometimes I'm in a situation where I like all the people, I want them to like me, but then all of a sudden I hit a tipping point where I've lost my energy and I need to rejuvenate that energy, and it's not the right moment for it. The party's still going, the dinner's still happening, and then I shut down. And I even know in my head, okay, I've probably said my last words for the evening, but then that's where the loneliness kicks in, because then I start wondering, has anyone noticed this about me? Like, why can't I talk to anybody? Why am I like this? Just make small talk, but I can't even do that. I'm literally shut down. I have no energy left, even though I might've been the life of the party, you know, an hour earlier. And in those situations, I feel incredibly lonely, particularly if they're ongoing. Like if your social group hangs out longer than you're able to hold on to your energy, and if they do that on a regular basis, you're going to feel lonely most of the time, even though you're with people you like and you're friends with and it's your community and so on. So though I would say on a regular basis, I have felt those two types of loneliness many times, but not the type where I have nobody around me. Because I think I'm so afraid of having no one around me that all the times I've been single in my life, I've actively sought out, you know, friends or dates or things to do or whatever. Because I know I'm really good for short bursts of time because I'm an outgoing introvert.
Yeah. Yeah. I can resonate with that because I think I'm an outgoing introvert as well. I mean, I need my alone time. I think it's an right. important distinction to make, right? That loneliness is not necessarily the same thing as being alone, you know, physically right. isolated. So, and I think the loneliness that hurts the most is the loneliness when you're surrounded by other people, because that's when the shame comes in. That's when the, like, what is wrong with me? That I, you know, I have all these people around me. I have colleagues, I have, you know, friends, and I'm at this dinner party. And then, you know, I feel just so out of place and I feel like I don't belong here and nobody maybe sees me or understands me. Right. So that, I think that's an important, and also what you described, the shame that when you went bankrupt and, you know, losing your house and business and all the things, and feeling that maybe people, you know, kind of didn't want to be around you because you had failed in a way, in some people's view, which I don't believe, so you felt that shame, which maybe made you maybe also retract from people, right? Because you felt the shame, and that sort of, it's a vicious cycle of
yeah. And maybe people loneliness. Are judging me in those situations, and that made me lose trust of my social interactions as well. And on top of being depressed, when you're not making the most rational decisions, maybe I lost trust a little too much in people. And that happens to me a lot. Like if I write an article and a lot of people don't like it, typically when that happens, you don't hear from the people who like the article. You only hear from the maniacs who want to reach out and tell you how much they hate you.
Yeah.
And then I lose trust again. Like, is everyone like this? Like, why is this happening to me?
Yeah.
And so you talk about this. So, you know, you have a section, what to do, and identify which dimension of connection you're lacking. And you talk about the intimate or emotional connections, the relational connections like friends or family, and the collective connections. I think for me, it's numbers 1 and 2. Like I don't ever feel like I don't belong. I don't really care about belonging in my community for some reason. And then you say discover your self-worth, which is incredibly important in both the situations I described.
Yeah.
And reach out, I don't know how to do. And maybe you could tell me if it's useful or not. I don't know. I don't understand reach out, because sometimes I don't know how.
And I think that's a really important point that you bring up, because To me, the loneliness, that's so many people tell you that, oh, you're feeling lonely. Well, reach out more, call up people, you know, people, call them up. And you can't do that until you sort of rediscovered your self-worth, until you worked on the first, like the connection with yourself first.
And people always say that, right? But that's, mm-hmm. that's really hard.
It's really hard.
How do you do that? Like, and look, I've had to do it for myself, but what are some ways of thinking about that?
Well, I think you talk about that a lot in your work as well. I think about your book titled Choose Yourself, right? Isn't that all about your self-worth and how to build your self-esteem and self-confidence and self-worth?
Right, exactly. It's how you can do that without the permission of others. Yeah. So a classic example, two classic examples. If you want a job at Google, someone at Google has to choose you. If you want to write a book and publish it with a publisher, someone at the publisher has to choose you.
Yeah.
And my view is, in almost every situation where you're feeling that desperate anxiety that someone should choose you, you could often take steps to choose yourself. And part of those steps is building a foundation of self-worth in a variety of ways. Like, you be healthy, you tame your emotional partnerships and connections and so on. But it's difficult. I call it a daily practice, because if I don't do it every day, I quickly, you know, slip down the ladder.
Yeah,
and lose that self-worth.
I agree with you. It is a daily practice and a multiple daily practice. And it's a decision that I have, that at least for me, I have to make that decision every day, right?
Like, how do you do it?
Like, you know, it's really about like waking up in the morning and deciding. It's like you say, well, you know, you have to, if you want that job at Google, or if you want to publish your book with an established publisher, you sort of sit there and wait for them to choose you. Or you can decide, make that decision to just own it and just do things and take the next step forward, even if you don't know what's going to happen next, right? So you have to, for me anyway, it's part of that, choosing yourself every single day and deciding that today, I don't know the 10 next steps in my life, but I know the first one. So I'm going to do that. So if it is to write a book and publish a book, start writing.
That's really interesting, because let's just make it very simple. If you're in a bad situation, meaning XYZ happened and now you're feeling lonely and you don't know what to do. So it feels complicated in your head. What do I do? I'm in this networking party and I can't talk, or I'm locked down because of COVID. I can't meet or talk to anybody and I don't know anybody. The key is not to go, you know, broad on this, but to go very small. So, I could just turn to the person next to me and ask them what they're working on if I'm at the dinner party. Mm-hmm. Like, think of like two or three moves ahead. Like, and this happens in games a lot. Like, let's say you're playing poker and you're down to just a few chips and everyone else has a lot of chips. You're not gonna go crazy. You're gonna say, okay, here's what I'm gonna do the next few hands. I'm just gonna wait for a great hand, and everything else I'm gonna fold if it's not costing me money. And that's a kind of a small strategy. You're just focusing on the next few hands. Or in tennis, your opponent is getting you. You just wanna get the ball back over the net a few more times and see if the opponent messes up a little bit.
Yeah.
In chess, you have a losing position. Can I make two or three moves without thinking of overall strategy of the game? Can I make two or three moves where I'm not going to lose immediately? And so here, what you're saying is, in a situation that feels global about my loneliness, that feels desperate, just what are two or three things I can do to, you know, micro alleviate that loneliness? And usually there's a way. But again, you have to pick correctly. Like, I remember one time, so when this is 2002, I was dead broke, I was losing my house, and I had a new baby. And everybody said, just okay. And I was just so depressed and lonely. I mean, everyone said, just play with your baby. Like, babies always make you feel good. That did not make me feel good at all. Because babies are hard work. Yeah. And so I had to really focus on the baby. But at the same time, I couldn't stop really focusing on my problems because I didn't have any self-worth and I was so anxious. And then I couldn't figure it out. It took me a long time to even begin to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, it's a lot about having a daily practice. And when I feel really low, there's something that I think I mentioned also last time that I do is, you know, I sit down and I don't even want to think about the next step or whatever I'm going to do, right?
Yeah.
I certainly don't want to reach out to anyone. And I sit down and I have this like little journal and then I write, you know, out the question and I write, how can I love myself a little more today? And just writing that question down and looking at the words and just feeling those words, because when I feel really down like that, I don't love myself very much, you know? So just writing that and asking myself, how can I love myself a little more today? And, you know, and it's different from day to day, right? Maybe that day I need to just lie down on the floor and take a nap, you know? Or maybe I need to just take my dog and go for a walk. It all depends, you know? So I decide on maybe two or three things that I can do for myself that day to feel a little better and to respect and honor myself. And that always shifts something in me that takes me out from that very, very dark place.
So there's two parts of this. One is you write down, how can I love myself a little better today? Mm-hmm. And then you take action where you take, you know, you do something like you take a nap, you treat yourself to something which shows your brain that you're taking care of yourself, that you love yourself. And so your brain's like, oh, okay, I don't need to feel as lonely because she loves me.
Yeah.
And, and I mentioned it's two steps because how important is the writing part? Because I've heard that is very important.
Yeah. To me anyway, it is. It's something about that, not writing it on the computer or on my phone, but actually writing it out with a pen, you know, on the paper and seeing the words, you know, to me anyway, that does something.
Here's where I almost never physically write except on this waiter's pad every morning where I write ideas down. So,
and that's, by the way, is another, and this is something that I learned from you, from, you know, your last book, Skip the Line, and which I really love. And I tell everyone to read your book and to do this because it's really made such a big difference. It's when you're really in a really dark place, for me anyway, when I write down ideas, and maybe I don't get to the 10 ideas, but at least I get to a few ideas, right? And then you also write about that these ideas they don't have to be about you. They can be ideas for other people, right? So maybe I'm not in a state of loving myself enough to think about good ideas for me, but maybe I can think about a good idea for my friend, right? And I share that idea with my friend. And that just, at least what it does for me is that it takes me down from my miserable story in my head. And it gets me like more into the present moment and away from my problems and focusing on someone else instead. So I find that that's extremely helpful.
Maybe part of the writing is because, like, the reason the writing part is important is because I always say you can't think your way out of depression, or you can't think your way to wealth, for instance. You have to take action also. Yes, you have to think of ideas and what you can do and so on, but there always has to be action components. You can't think in your head, well, I'm going to love myself better today, and then that's it. You did your job for the day. You have to write it down and then take action. And even the writing it down is a small form of action. And so, like you say, it's a small step. It's not just telling yourself something. It's actually the first small step of loving yourself is an action, writing it down.
Yeah.
But what other actions do you do to when you're, or what should I do when I'm, let's say, at a dinner party and don't know, you know, and I'm starting to feel like anxious and bored because I lost all my energy and the introversion is kicking in?
You know, I am, before I would say, I would tell you to just, you know, stay there, pull through, talk to people. Today, I don't do that. I usually try to remove myself from a party where I feel the energy is low and I don't get, it's all about relational energy. And it's a different, it's that is a component of the whole loneliness connection discussion is relational energy. So relational energy is really just the energy that is created in every single social interaction that we have. And you know how you sometimes you spend time with people and afterwards you feel completely drained. You know, you feel like bad about yourself maybe. And I used to think that there was something wrong about me when I felt like that, and that I had to sort of like make efforts to sort of maybe see that person even more to try to figure out like what did I do wrong. But today I know that there's just people that I shouldn't be around. And then I try to surround myself with people who actually bring me energy, that make me feel good about myself, or challenge me, or, you know, something that just sparks something, right? That is positive.
That's so important because, look, you're a writer and you've written, you know, several books, two books or more. I know of the two books, the Nobel Peace Prize one, Betraying the Nobel, and then the Lone Wolf Killer book. And I will say writing is a competitive sport. Yes, there's beauty and art to it, but people are reading your book as opposed to reading another. So there's a competitive element. And in a competitive sport, you need to train and be healthy and in physical shape and everything. And you need to be around other people who bring up your competitive juices. Not people competing with you, but people who are supporting you and, and you're supporting them and you're in this together. And otherwise, you know, if you're with a bunch of losers and, you know, some, you know, they're all smoking crack in some crack house, you're probably not going to write a successful book. But unless you write a book about surviving crack addiction or something, I don't know. there's sometimes when you can't get out of, like, let's say, you know, my wife, to her credit, she is a shy extrovert. So we're a good team. I'm able to go into a situation, bust the door down and say, we're here. And then I just ran out of energy and she takes over from there. Like everybody, she's shy going in, but then everybody loves her and she could talk to everybody and has things to say. And she's very giving and she does it very well. So sometimes you can't just remove yourself from a situation because you're with somebody and it's hard. Like sometimes I'll just go to the bathroom for a really long time, but then I don't want people to think, what's he doing in the bathroom? Smoking crack? Like what's going on? And so what do you do there?
I tend to find one person in that room that I can talk to, because that whole, I think when you're introvert like us, the whole like small talk with a bunch of people, it really drains me. But if I can have a deeper conversation with just one person, that kind of saves me. So I try to like sit in a corner with just one person, or focus on, you know, one person at around the table, or, you know, something like that. That's usually saves me.
So A, loneliness is important to acknowledge when it's occurring. And there's many different types.
Yeah.
Like whether you feel bad around someone, that's a very subtle thing to notice about yourself, because it might be with a boss. You always feel bad when you're having dinner with them, or if it's with friends or whatever. Or there's the loneliness of depression. There's the loneliness if you're isolated. There's the loneliness of, you know, as you mentioned, there's if you're lacking a partner, or if you don't have enough friends, or if you want to be in a group and you're not finding status there. So there's various types of loneliness. Oh, I wanted to ask, How many friends do you think is the average person should have? Not that there's a should, and I'm not looking necessarily for an exact number, but if you have one, that would be great, and then I'll know. But what do you think about when you think like, oh, do I have enough friends? Do I not have enough friends?
Well, I used to think that I needed many, 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 many friends. I collected friends. And then it turned out that none of them were close friends. So I think, actually, I think that you only need one really good friend.
And, really?
Yeah. And everything else is kind of bonus.
And you think you can make friends later in life? Like a lot of people have friends from their childhood, but let's say you're 60 years old. Could you make a new friend that's such a good friend that this person will appear at your funeral?
Absolutely. I hope so. No, but I do believe so. And you know what? I've changed, and this is very recent. I've changed my perspective and view on friendships.
I've moved around a lot,
and I used to be really jealous of, you know, all the people who had close friends from childhood and from there were babies. And I used to think that that was the thing that I wanted, right? And I couldn't have that because I had moved around so much. So I always wanted to, you know, I would hold on to those really old friendships, that the oldest ones that at least that I had. And then, and recently, actually just a couple of weeks ago, I reunited with some girlfriends that I've actually known we sort of lost touch for many, many years, but now that I moved back to Norway 5 years ago. And so I reconnected with some of these older friends, and we have known each other for 39 years. So that's a, you know, reasonably old friendship to me. And then realizing that we have completely gone in different directions. We really don't have, you know, much to speak about anymore. And we don't really have like common values or common, you know, anything. And also, you know, discovering that, you know, if people don't wish you well, if you don't get the feeling that they wish you well and they want and they're happy for you in whatever you're doing, right? Then I don't think it's worth to maintain that relationship. And I think that, and I spoke to another friend about this, who is a more recent friend who I've known for a couple of years. And she says that you can move, you know, you have these like sort of like circles of people in your life, and you have that very, very inner circle with your very close ones. Maybe, you know, for you, that would be Robin, right? And your kids. And for me, that's my husband, Mike.
And Jay, who's on this podcast listening.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. And so, and then you have the circle around that one, which is more sort of the closer friends and people. And then you have the circle outside of that again. So you can move people, you know, in and out of different circles. You don't have to tell them you're doing that, but you can keep a little bit of distance to those who maybe are not like, you don't need to burn any bridges. But I'm not maintaining, I made a decision recently, is that I'm not going to maintain relationships and friendships just because they remind me of something in my childhood or in my youth. Out of nostalgia, almost.
Yeah. So like right now, how many, let's say, close friends do you have? Like people you could call up and tell both. I saw Jordan Peterson give a talk the other day on YouTube, and he basically says you want people who you can tell bad news to, and they don't immediately say, oh yeah, that happened to my cousin's friend also. And then they go on for 45 minutes telling that story because you didn't really get anything out of telling them your bad news. You wanted support and help, and instead they told you their own story. And he said you should be able to tell them bad news and good news. Like they should be happy for you and help you celebrate when you have good news, and they should really listen to you when you have bad news. And yeah. He said that's a good friend.
Mm-hmm.
So how many people do you feel like you have like that in your life?
I think I have three people like that in my life today.
That's good.
And that may change, right, in a couple of years. But I mean, and now I'm not hanging on to it either. So if someone sort of removes herself or himself from my, and they're not, you know, responding or they're not, you know, reaching out anymore, then they will sort of be removed and there maybe be some others. So I'm not clinging on to friendships or relationships. And I think relationships are really there to absolutely support us and be happy for us and wish us well. They're also there to make us grow. And not all of our relationships or friendships are always comfortable. A friend is also someone who can tell you the truth, you know, when with something that you need to hear that you don't necessarily want to hear, you know?
Yeah. Right. No, that's a good definition as well. And then let's say you're going out with somebody. Let's say you're having a relationship with a boyfriend or girlfriend, and you're not feeling that this is the right thing for you, but it's very hard to, those things are always very hard to know what to do and whether to end it or not. Like, what do you do after that? Like, and that's a kind of loneliness as well. Mm-hmm. What have you ever been in that situation? Like, what tactics do you use in that situation?
It's been a while since I've been in that situation because I've been married for 15 years. So it's been a while, but I used to, back in those days when I was dating and, you know, we broke up, you know, with a boyfriend, I would immediately surround myself with lots of friends and lots of girlfriends. That's what I would do. And back in those days, I had a lot of people around me all the time because I felt that I needed to be, you know, I was incapable of being in my own company and feeling well in my own company. I was, you know, I just, you know, it was horrible to have even one evening alone with myself. Do you know what I mean? Have you been in that situation?
Yeah, I can't handle it.
Yeah.
So I immediately, like, I go out every night. But what if you were in an economic lockdown and you can't go out every night and you really are just lonely?
Yeah. Well, then you should,
in the purest sense.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's when, first of all, you should get into my course, into my online masterclass, and get some support there from me and the community, and also work on the self-worth and work on connecting with yourself so that you are actually capable of being happy in your own company. Not that you should be happy in your own company all the time, but at least that you are capable, right?
Yeah, maybe list things you enjoy doing by yourself and try to do them.
Yeah.
Like you said, take a nap if you're feeling tired. And yeah. I like these, like, loneliness is very complicated. I like these questions you ask, like, do you ever feel as if you don't have the support you need? Do you ever feel rejected or invisible, exhausted, burned out, depressed? Like, you don't have anything to live for. If you answered yes to one or more of these questions, chances are you suffer from loneliness. And 60% of American adults often or always feel lonely. And you make the point, which is very true, because I was this person. The person with 5,000 friends on Facebook could be much lonelier than you or me. And I was definitely that person for large chunks of time. And again, identify, is it a intimate loneliness? Is it relational, like not enough friends? Is it collective? You know, take actions to discover self-worth. Reach out to people as much as you can. I love the take small actions if you don't know what to do, if you're feeling lost. Because often when you're depressed, you don't know what to do.
Yep.
And of course, most important, people, Jay, I want you to come on the podcast. Jay, can you open up your video? So before we talk to Jay, I also want to remind people, how can people find your course?
So on my website, unitorettini.com, it's on the website there. You can just click on it and download. There's a free guide there, actually. You can also, from my Instagram account, I'm the only one in the world with my name. So UNNITURETTINI. So you can find me and contact me through my Instagram or Facebook or my website and get access to the course.
So in part two, not only will Uni give more specific techniques for dealing with loneliness, but we drill down and find out if Jay is lonely, a young lad from Malaysia stuck here in the big city. And Jay's answers and our, or in particularly Uni's answers to Jay, were enlightening for me. So stay tuned for part two. You could download it today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.